Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine you are standing at the ultimate crossroads of the ancient world. For 5,000 years, empires, nomadic hordes, and merchants constantly marched through your homeland. You would expect the local DNA to be completely scrambled, right? But what if the genetic core barely budged, while the culture right down to the physical shape of people's skulls radically changed?
Oh, it's wild.
Right. How could a region experience 5 millennia of intense human traffic, yet maintain an unbroken genetic thread?
It honestly completely upends our standard models of human migration. I mean, we're looking at a sweeping data set today that challenges the very idea of what happens when massive expanding empires collide with local populations.
Yeah, and before we get into the weeds of this deep dive,
right,
today we celebrate the work of Irini Scortinotti, Harold Ringbauer, Johannes Krauss, and their teams at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology and Tbilisi State University, who have advanced our understanding of ancient population dynamics in the Caucasus.
Absolutely. And to understand why this genetic resilience is so biologically and historically shocking, we really first have to ground ourselves in the sheer extremity of the geography we're talking about here.
Right. It's not just a flat plain.
Exactly. We are focusing on the Southern Caucasus. So if you look at a modern map, you know, this roughly corresponds to the nations of Georgia and Armenia.
Yeah.
And it is a region squeezed right between the Black Sea to the west and the Caspian Sea to the east.
Which means geographically, this area is a fortress, but, and this is the key, right? A fortress with a few very crucial fatal doors.
Yes. Perfect way to put it.
Because you have the Greater Caucasus Mountain Range forming this massive, jagged physical wall to the north.
Mm.
And it acts as a towering barrier separating the vast, open Eurasian steppe from the ancient civilizations of the Near East.
Mm-hmm.
But because of narrow geographical bottlenecks, like the famous Dariel Pass, which is sometimes called the Gates of the Allens, this entire region functioned as a massive continental funnel. Anyone wanting to move north or south had to squeeze through here.
Right, whether for trade or for conquest. And the historical record shows that resulting turbulence perfectly. I mean, this territory was the ultimate buffer zone.
Yeah.
It was a brutal, perpetual battleground for the superpowers of antiquity. You had the Roman legions marching through here. The Sassanid Persian Empire fought bitterly to control it.
Which is already a lot.
Right. And then later, you had Byzantine diplomats, Arab conquerors, and this seemingly endless stream of fierce steppe nomads coming down from the northern plains. You know, groups like the Sarmatians, the Alans, and eventually the Huns.
Here, let's unpack this. Is the ancient Caucasus like a massive melting pot where all these invading groups completely blended together? Or is it more like a busy hotel where guests come and go but leave no trace on the permanent staff?
That is the exact question this study tackles. Because historically, archaeologists track these invasions through pots, right? Through trade networks and weapons.
Oh, like finding a Roman coin or a Sassanid sword in the dirt.
Exactly. The material culture changes with dizzying speed, reflecting all those outside influences. But the actual biological interactions, whether these foreign armies actually settled down, had kids with the locals, or just extracted taxes and moved on, that has been a massive blind spot.
So they needed to read the genetic diary of the people themselves.
Right. And the sheer scale of the extraction they pulled off to do this is staggering. They extracted genome-wide data from 230 ancient individuals.
Wow.
Yeah, recovered from 50 different archaeological sites spread all across the region. And this isn't just a snapshot of one era. They built a continuous timeline spanning from 3500 BCE all the way to 700 CE.
Wait, that is over 4,000 years of continuous volatile human history.
It is, but the volume of genomes is only half the story. The real breakthrough is the analytical methodology. They went way beyond just basic ancestry mapping.
Meaning they weren't just checking if someone had like broad European or Asian heritage.
Exactly. They applied these really advanced techniques to find direct biological relatives across time and space. The first one is called IBD, or Identical by Descent Segment Tracking.
Wait, finding shared DNA segments in 5,000-year-old bones. Isn't that like trying to find a needle in a prehistoric haystack?
I mean, It sounds impossible, right? But what's fascinating here is that the length of these shared genetic blocks actually acts as a molecular tape measure for time and distance, letting us map out ancient family trees and migration routes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, think of your DNA like a newly manufactured, perfectly ordered deck of playing cards. When you pass that genetic information to your child, the deck gets cut and shuffled together with your partner's deck. That's recombination.
Okay.
And with every single passing generation, the shuffling continues. So after 10 generations of constant mixing, the chances of finding a long, unbroken sequence of those original cards are tiny.
So if you sequence two ancient individuals buried in different cemeteries and they share a massive, long block of identical DNA,
then that shuffling process hasn't been happening for very long.
They share a very recent common ancestor, like they could be siblings or first cousins. But if the blocks are tiny, the deck has been shuffled for hundreds of years.
Exactly. So that's the IBD metric. And they paired that with a second one called ROH, or runs of homozygosity. This looks at the exact same shuffling mechanism, but it measures consanguinity or inbreeding within a single community.
Wait, let me make sure the listener has the logic on this one, because this work is incredibly intimate.
Go for it.
If IBD looks at shared blocks between two different people, ROH looks for identical blocks within one person. Meaning the DNA a person inherited from their mother is completely identical to the DNA they inherited from their father in certain stretches.
You've got it.
And the only way you get identical blocks from both parents is if your mother and father share a recent common ancestor.
Right. And when we see ROH blocks, as long as the ones discovered in this deep dive, we are looking at individuals whose parents were likely first or second cousins.
Okay, so armed with these twin tape measures, IBD and ROH, what actually happens when we apply them to 4,000 years of skeletons? Was it a melting pot or a hotel?
The data reveals a stunning contrast between the broad regional population level and the intimate details of city life. On the big picture level, looking at the entire population across millennia, almost nothing changed.
Really?
Yeah. Over 90% of the individuals sampled stayed firmly anchored within a distinct local genetic cluster for the entire 5,000-year span.
That is, that's practically unheard of for a crossroads territory. All those Roman conquests and Arab expansions, and none of it fundamentally rewrote the baseline.
It is a profound level of continuity, though there is one major plot twist in the middle of that timeline. During the Middle and Late Bronze Age, the local gene pool did absorb two distinct influxes of new DNA simultaneously.
From where?
From steppe pastoralists coming down from the north and Anatolian populations moving up from the south.
Okay, so there was some mixing.
Yes, but the locals weren't wiped out by conquering pastoralists. They absorbed this new DNA, blended it, and then that new updated baseline simply locked into place and remains stable for the next several thousand years.
That's a satellite view, right? The big picture. But you mentioned a contrast with city life.
Yeah, this is where the ROH data, the inbreeding metric, really comes in. They contrasted booming urban centers with rural isolation. So let's look at the rural site of Nidziki first.
Okay, mountain villages.
Right. The data pointed to incredibly high rates of close kin unions. Between 25% and 30% of the marriages in these rural mountain communities were between first or second cousins.
Oh, wow. So geographic isolation led directly to genetic isolation. Everyone is related, and outsiders just aren't climbing the mountain to join the village.
Exactly. The hotel is closed. But then you travel out of the mountains down into the Iberian Plain to an urban center called Semtavro.
A bustling trade hub.
Very bustling. And the molecular data completely flips upside down. When researchers scanned the individuals buried in the large city cemetery for IBD segments, looking for shared genetic blocks, they found almost nothing.
So they were entirely unrelated strangers living side by side.
Yes, high genetic diversity. And even crazier, they found several distant genetic outliers. People buried in this local cemetery whose DNA linked back to the Central Asian steppes, or even to European populations from the Carpathian Basin.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You see a bunch of foreign-looking deformed skulls in an ancient Georgian city. Mm-hmm. You assume they're invading nomads, right?
You do, because we haven't even talked about the skulls yet, which is the absolute climax of these findings.
Yeah, explain this to the listener, because it's so visually striking.
Right. So the researchers found 21 individuals exhibiting artificial cranial deformation, or ACD. This is a practice where an infant's head is tightly bound with bandages or boards, forcing the skull to grow backward and upward into a striking, elongated shape.
And historically, we know this was a custom introduced by those fierce steppe nomads like the Alans.
Exactly. So you find these radically modified skulls in a Georgian cemetery, and the immediate assumption is, well, these are the Alans, these are the invading nomads.
But, and this is the twist, the DNA proves otherwise.
Right. Out of 20 medieval individuals analyzed who had artificial cranial deformation, 15 of them possessed entirely local Southern Caucasus DNA.
It just blows my mind. They weren't invaders at all.
No, they were locals. They were deeply embedded in the local mating networks. The researchers even identified a mother and daughter pair in the cemetery. Both had artificially elongated skulls, and both had purely local DNA.
So what does this all mean? It completely changes how we view ancient borders. They weren't solid walls keeping people out. They were more like cultural filters.
Precisely. It separates the concept of cultural adoption from genetic replacement. High mobility, foreign contact, warfare, none of that necessarily results in massive population turnover.
The locals just looked at the nomads passing through and thought, hey, that elongated skull looks really prestigious, let's do that.
Exactly. The practice arrived with the nomads, but it became a locally adopted cultural trend. The people weren't replaced, they just adopted the aesthetic of the visitors.
Which is a beautiful way to think about how biology and culture intersect. But, you know, we should be careful here. What are the limitations of a deep dive like this?
That's a vital point. The calm voice of scientific reason requires us to note that this study isn't perfect. For one, Western Georgia, which was known in antiquity as Colchis, is still heavily undersampled.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we can't be entirely sure if the patterns hold perfectly on the western side of the mountains. Also, there's the issue of time. Radiocarbon dating inherently comes with margins of error, typically spanning about 200 to 300 years.
Right, so it's not like looking at a modern passport with a timestamp.
Exactly. We can't tie specific genetic outliers to precise historical events, like a specific Roman battle in a specific year or a single Alan invasion. We just had these broad windows.
But even with those blurry edges, the take-home message here is incredibly powerful. Despite 5,000 years of migrations, wars, and shifting empires, the Southern Caucasus maintained incredibly resilient genetic core while readily adopting striking foreign cultural practices.
It really is the ultimate proof that a society can completely transform its culture without losing its underlying biological heritage.
It's brilliant. What does this mean for our understanding of modern globalized societies? As we interact with cultures around the world, are we also adopting the metaphorical skulls of our visitors while maintaining our own unseen core identities?
It's a fascinating question to leave everyone with.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Bone dust, bright screen glow. We trace the drift from long ago. Dots on a plot start to misalign. An outlier steps out of the line. PC1, PC2, pulling like tide. Coordinates a whisper what time can't hide. Two old currents start to collide. Numbers breathe where names have died. Where the outliers cutting through the noise, feeding broken fragments into measure.